Spiegel and Holmes.
Okay, here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on the Score.
We got to get ready for these guys now. They got a hell of a young coach. He's an offensive-minded guy. He's coming here to wreck your ass.
Chicago's a great football city. Be a great opportunity. I want to see us have a great week of preparation, and we've got our work cut out for us, as you do every week in this league.
But I'm sure you've seen Caleb Williams' tape.
He's a dynamic athlete. He can beat you in a variety of ways, and they've got excellent skill around him.
And I got a little older and kind of realized how good Matthew Stafford is at his job.
Stafford back to pass, throws middle, Kyron the catch, at the five, a somersault to the end zone! Touchdown, LA!
You know, watching him, you know, he's been doing it for a while. And so watching someone like that, that's, you know, had the, you know, success that he's had, you know, you want to learn from that. So, you know, it's going to be exciting to go against him.
It's cool. Makes me feel old. But he's obviously immensely talented. He makes plays every single week that you see on TV that blow you away. As a quarterback, I sit there and go, man, that is some incredible stuff. And then I'm sure there's plays he wants back, like all of us. So, you know, he seems like a sharp kid, obviously really talented. I'm sure he'll figure it out, you know, more and more as he continues to play. I'm sure he's going to have a great career.
Williams pitches into Swift. Swift in trouble. And down he goes. And the Colts hold.
Absolutely hate the play call.
I know we haven't lived up to what we want to be in our building right now in terms of some of the execution there. But the thing that we can rely on is the communication has been great.
So if I'm watching that tape, whether it be effort or whether it be mental mistakes or whether it be toughness or whatever it is, and I point that and I get out of my chair and I say, this is not what we want. This is not acceptable. Does everybody understand that this is not what we're trying to get done here?
These next two games, I think we play the Rams and then we play the Panthers. So we need these two games. We need these NFC games. We got to start off right.
Yeah, you better lock the hell in.
Get your hand in the dirt and come off and hit them in the mouth. That's what's fun.
The official adventures of
Spiegel and Holmes. Afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score.
That's right. We are here, and it is a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT. It's not a game, Illinois.com. I'm Lawrence Holmes. That's my partner, Matt Spiegel, over there. And we have got you until 6 o'clock. Everyone was trying to get the hell out of Wrigley today, apparently.
You know why, Lawrence? It's the first Friday of the Spiegel and Holmes show during a Bears game week, and there's Cubs stuff to discuss, too, and the sports universe is like, these men have been cut short Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Thursday was a full show. You know that the Reds and the Cubs were listening to that, and they were like, we want as much of a Friday show as we can. So they agreed to go out there and play the shortest Cubs game since 2001. So you get more than two full hours of us on a Friday. This is that's the shortest Friday game in the history of this afternoon shift for me that I can remember.
It's pretty crazy. And I felt like while I was watching the Reds in particular, it was just like, you know what? I'm watching guys make like legitimate business decisions, and I'm not mad at them. I'm not mad at them for doing that. But guys like not even thinking about running into the baseline to break up two, just like, yeah, you know what? There's only two more games after this one. Let's get that done and let's get the hell out of here if we can.
Did Antonio Pierce call them out for business decisions from Vegas as he called out his football team?
Well, he would have had every right to call them out for business decisions because that's what that was.
Can I go on record? I don't know how much this has been out there, even as a possibility. Why don't you ask me and then I'll answer, okay? Ask me who the manager of the Cincinnati Reds is next year.
Speaks, who do you think is going to be the manager of the Cincinnati Reds next year?
Lawrence, I think David Ross is going to be the manager of the Cincinnati Reds next year.
Why is that?
Because they just fired David Bell, guy they like a lot, but after a long run, they're supposed to have gotten over the hump and be showing up as a contender right now. They've got a host of young players, and not all of them have arrived together. There were some injuries. There was some minor spending, but I think there'll be some more. Pressure is on the front office to deliver on what has been a really good farm system. Ellie De La Cruz and Hunter Green are all-stars. It's game time, and it's time for a manager who knows the division and can light a fire to come in there. And David Ross was a really good Cincinnati Red. He was a really good Cincinnati Red. He was the personal catcher for Bronson Arroyo when he was there. And he's beloved in town already. I think it is a terrific opportunity for one David Ross. And I will go on record as saying he's their manager by opening day.
So when Rossi decided to take his walkabout, which I completely understand as someone who suffers from wanderlust, I completely understand the idea of just saying, you know what, I'm going to kick back a while. And I'm sure it was a gut punch for him to lose his gig when you thought you had made it through, you know, Black Monday, where you're like, wait a minute, why? I'm still the manager. Oh, Craig Counsell's available and I'm not the manager anymore. There was part of me that thought, and I love Rossi. We did the manager's show every week. I thought that he had made a mistake by turning down the Yankees bench coaching job, because I'm sitting there thinking there's going to be other candidates that start to pop up, guys that are fired that are going to be attractive to other organizations. And I was like, man, just keep your name in there. If you're associated with the Yankees winning and they win the division last night, It keeps your name out there. But I never thought about Cincinnati being a place where he might resurface. It makes all the sense in the world. And that's a place where he learned some very valuable lessons about his life. If you read his book, Teammate, it was his experience with Dusty Baker and Theo Epstein talking to him and being like, you know, there are a lot of people that, like, your rep is not great. And he went on a journey to become a better teammate while he was there in Cincinnati.
And I think you're right to remember that important part of his Cincinnati bond. I hear you on the Yankees job, but here's the thing. David Ross got paid to chill and parent in Florida this year.
Yeah.
Got paid in full, took his time and just hung out with his kids and did his thing.
Went to sporting events because his kids are like high school age and he's going to games. And it's kind of what he wanted to do. And he would always, even when we did the manager show, he would lament the time that you lose because of the game itself. So you're right. Like, it's a perfect way to collect a check and be able to be a dad.
And in terms of the reputation, while sure, being part of a Yankees thing that wins could put a little shine on the reputation, how about the highest paid manager in baseball at the time until Alex Cora signed his deal? Craig Counsell comes to Chicago and is going to do the exact same thing that you did. The very same thing. So with the effect that this same performance is having on the thought process of manager value or the thought process on council value, and all of that is debatable because there are organizational issues to discuss with the Cubs that we will. If anything, it has just made David Ross look even better in absentia, because it's not like a new manager came in and achieved something massive that David did not with very much the same club. So I think David's reputation's in a good place. I think he has not traveled far from the zeitgeist and the headspace of the baseball cognoscenti, if you will. Big words on a Friday
You're
afternoon.
Using
Let's
a
go.
A lot of big words today.
I'm
ton
feeling
of
it.
Them.
I like this show. I like this show. You know, I like it too, actually. Right? I mean, it's like, so I'm feeling it. I'm rolling. You call me out. You make fun of me if you need to on the big word front. But I think David's in a good spot, and I'll be surprised if the Reds don't call.
Big fun-loving Grandpa Rossi.
No, he's really not that guy. Like, he's got a lot of sandpaper. And you're right. I do think that people will look back at this and go, well, wait, this seems to be organizational. This seems to be above the manager. And I was one of the people that celebrated the move to bring in Counsell. And I think eventually it is going to bear fruit. The reason why I think it's going to bear fruit is because Craig Counsell now has his hands on this organization. He's seen it now for a year. He has seen off season to end of season. And now instead of just kind of being a bystander, someone who's just observing, now he can go, okay, I now see how all of this works. I have as good of bona fides as anyone here in this organization. Let me tell you how this is going to go going forward and what it takes to make that jump from being a team that's barely above 500 to being a 90-win team. He keeps talking about that. He did it today inside of the television broadcast on Marquee. He had discussed the idea, echoing some of the stuff that he had talked about last week. And and I know that you want to talk about that in full, which is great because we have a lot of time to do it today. I like that. I think that this organization has needed someone to push back. And I think the two previous managers, it was very easy to quiet them because people looked at them as being not hip to the game, that they are not embracing modern baseball the way that someone like Craig Counsell was. And I think that there's some accuracy to it. I also think that there was some water carrying that went on with it. I think people were blaming Joe and Rossi for stuff that wasn't their fault. And they became convenient behind the times managers. And it allowed people to just kind of go, oh, no, those guys don't get it. Counsell gets it. I agree that Counsell gets it, but maybe not in the way that folks would have preferred that Counsell gets it.
Well, the problem is they brought in a guy who gets it, and now he's going to tell them what he gets.
Damn
it hasn't, because it hasn't worked out the way that they envisioned. And as they try and figure out, well, why were we bad for 2 months? And then things did pick up. I think Craig's got some thoughts, and he's going to give them some thoughts. I would love to know what your thoughts are on what you've seen, and we'll have time in the offseason to do it, but we do have a couple of minutes here to discuss. Like, when he says, like you said last week and echoed today, we should be in the business of building 90-win teams. We should be striving for the division here, and that the gap between them and the Brewers is palpable. There's two main things that come to mind for me in terms of roster construction, okay? And one of them is the willingness to pay for pretty good players who you hope then become great players. Like, let's pay, and Ian Happ is a pretty damn good player. Seiya Suzuki is a pretty good player, you know? They're not stars, and they're not paying them quite star money. They're paying them functional money. But if you're a big market behemoth, are you better off putting young players who are cheap in some of those spots and then truly paying for stars, paying at the rate the Phillies are paying for Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, Nick Castellanos, Kyle Schwarber, while they're getting good contributions from kids like Bryson Stott and Alec Bohm? Hell, they're paying for JT Realmuto too. You know, paying for multiple stars while being an accelerated development place for your kids. And so those are the two things, and I think they actually kind of work together. Because the Brewers, where he comes from, they have an accelerated development where, like, Sal Frelick comes up. Jackson Churio comes up at age 20, and they lock him in, and they're like, oh, man, look at that. That's kind of I think that's a star. That there's guy after guy after guy who's coming up as a young, super cheap player. So if they did want to pay for a star, it would just augment the treasure trove of kids. There's a reason the council keeps talking about Porter Hodge, keeps talking about PCA, keeps talking about Michael Bush. Young players who are cheap and contributing. He talked a big game all spring about young players contributing, and they didn't really get here and do it. Matt Mervis got here, and he's like, well, let me take a look at this guy that you guys have been high on, a guy who you thought was going to do something last year. He didn't really like Matt Mervis too much, sent Matt Mervis away, you know?
Be heard from again.
Right, right. So Craig's like, all right, let me take a look at some of these other guys that you like. Let me take a look at your Keegan Thompsons, at your Caleb Killians. Yeah, what are we doing here? No, not so much with these guys. So I think he's got some thoughts on how they develop and deliver young players to the big league club, and he should be listened to in that regard. And then I suspect the makeup of the roster in terms of payroll, if you're going to pay guys, they better be star quality. You can't just pay decent players, because in the end, that can hamstring you.
where I'm at on this is it's fairly simple, and I know that the Cubs and people who will defend the spending of the Cubs over the last couple of years will throw their payroll at me. There needs to be a commitment to paying for the wins and not just kind of win wishing. When I look around the diamond on the Cubs, I see some pretty good players. I don't see one great player. And I don't see them. I see them tap dancing and playing around with the CBT. Either you're in or you're out. And I look at this is just a small example. When everything was going on with Bellinger and you had Boris, and maybe you felt like Boris had been humbled and his clients had been humbled, one of his other clients would have helped you tremendously this year. Uh-huh.
It's true.
And that's Matt Chapman. Like, he would have helped you tremendously. And it was that dance that they were doing where, sure, you wanted to experiment and say Morel needs to be given a chance. Depending on what you thought you could be and looking at the Cubs starting pitching staff this year, this feels like a wasted opportunity because those guys were really good throughout the season. But that third base thing was a disaster for a big portion of the year. And what you could have gotten was what did Chapman end up being this year? Was he like a 6 WAR player?
Something like that. He came on. He didn't have a great start, but he kept getting better and better all the way through.
And you could have solidified a position of weakness, and you could have helped yourself offensively. But you were doing this kind of in and out dance with the CBT, and you don't want to spend money. You want to just kind of go ahead and say, well, we'll let Craig help to develop Morel. And Craig, I think, worked really hard to try to make the Morel thing happen. It didn't. So be it. But when I look at the roster of the Cubs, I see Ian Happ's a 4-win player. Yeah, I Dansby's a 4-win player. Nico's a 4-win player. And you have to have that. You also have to have a 6-win player. If you're going to be legit, you've got to find a guy like that that's going to help your squad out when you are in a rut offensively. Someone that is feared, not just for approach, but for the type of damage that they do at the plate. And that strikes me as being one of their issues. The other issue to me is there should never be a question in free agency on where someone's going to go in the National League if the choice isn't between the Phillies, the Dodgers, and maybe the Mets. The Cubs should be right there. That they should be the team that's saying, when you look at the rest of the teams in the National League Central, you look at those squads and go, Pittsburgh is actively trying to lose. The Reds are, I think, moving in the right direction, but it's still them trying to win with development. The Cardinals are still a little bit out in the wilderness. And then there's the Brewers. You should be suffocating the rest of the teams in the National League Central with the money, with the stability that comes along with the fact that you have an RSN that people actually care about.
Yeah, but
you have an RSN that makes money.
This is where it breaks down, though, because the Philly model, and remember when they came in here and we looked at them and they were just there in Philly the other night when the Phillies clinched, Philly's got the last real big money TV deal. Cubs did not. Cubs were late, and their RSN is frankly struggling in terms of delivering what they thought it was going to deliver, and it's a shared thing, and it's just they missed that boat in terms of revenue. But there is revenue. They've done a nice job of setting up all those alternate streams. It's just that they've got a situation right now where, like you said, dancing with that first level, the CBT. And I think they are going to go over it. Towards the end of the year, they're trying to DFA some guys and or at least put guys on waivers and see if they can get back under. And that's something that a lot of teams do towards the end. But I hear you on the suffocation. It's gotta be one or the other. If you are a big market behemoth, you gotta keep going. And the Cardinals, they tried to throw good money after bad. Their Arenado move and Goldschmidt move, I thought, were ballsy. Then those guys got old quickly. So they went out and tried to go veteran starting pitcher, veteran starting pitcher, veteran starting pitcher. Trade, you know, sign Contreras, which has actually worked out for them. They kept chasing with free agent dollars. Will that hamstring them in the long term? Maybe. I know it's hard. I know it's scary. But you've got options to do here. And now that some money's coming off the books, I think they can probably still do both, where they spend some real legit free agent money in this offseason and also overhaul some of the things that they do in terms of accelerating the kids in the system and giving counsel more to work with young kids next spring training.
I just kind of like that there's a new, fresh set of eyes. And I know that Carter hasn't been here for forever, but I think that the point that you made a couple days ago about Jed and Jed being a good sounding board for Theo and a good foil for Theo, I'm not sure that Carter is that. I'm not in any meetings. I know the council is. I know that council, because of the deal that he's got, because of his own experience in the game, he fears no one. And that's what they need, an injection of honesty into how it is that they're going to go about building a better baseball team. That's what's got me excited. It's what had me excited about it when the hire was made. And talking to him, this is one of those dudes where you speak softly and carry a big stick. He's not out there over-emoting during games. He's not the guy that's screaming. What I like about him and why I think he can end up being effective, he's going to be able to speak the language that Carter and Jed use as shorthand. But his actual on-field and in-dugout experience gives him a perspective that they don't have. And quite honestly, I think baseball front offices around the league need more of. I think that we have moved to this place where they have been stripping away the human element to a degree. And I remember I had a conversation with Theo 4 years ago where he kept talking about, well, everyone that I hire looks like me and everyone has the same background. Even with Craig Counsell's Notre Dame degree and him being a well-spoken analytic mind, his experience as a player means something. And I want that to be added to the collective of what the Cubs front office is, which honestly has felt like spreadsheet baseball to me over the last few years. And it shouldn't be that way when you're in a position where you can go out and bully the rest of the teams in your division.
Yeah, you know, there's I hear what you're saying. I mean, that kind of the spreadsheet groupthink thing that's out there isn't going anywhere. And if anything, Council believes it more than any of the last two managers.
You know,
so Council's on board with that stuff in terms of the concepts. But I think he really believes they ought to have a superstar. And we've believed now for a couple years that this team needs a superstar. Lawrence, I remember I was doing the sports reporters on Marquee, like going into one off season, and the whole panel was like Cubs people, and I was like, what do they need? What do they need? And everybody said, a superstar. They need a superstar. They need a superstar. And that's the summer that they got, or that's the winter that they got Dansby Swanson. And due respect to Dansby, who is a good player who really came on in these last 3 months. I think the OPS was over 800, brilliant defensive shortstop, super solid teammate. That is not Trey Turner. It just is not. And of all the shortstops, I know the deal looks maybe the most cost efficient and the most sensible, even after a couple of years. But that's not superstar, you know. So I'm not going to be quiet about Juan Soto dreaming. Not going to be quiet about that. And they might
you
have to.
Be.
They might have to try and find a way to get somebody to waive a no-trade clause in a corner outfield spot. They might have to try and find a way to do some things. But I'm not going to be quiet about the idea of an ace pitcher at the front if all of a sudden Shota and Steele and Tyone are 2-3-4. Then how you feeling, you know? And Assad is your five, and maybe Jordan Wicks is a lefty in your pen, or he's forced to develop some habits that can improve himself because he's not guaranteed a spot. You know what I mean? Like, that would be exciting, and I think you're going to see some expenditures in that way. And it's time. It is really time to lean on this division and lean on the fact that you have a very smart, good manager. Let him tell you what you're doing wrong. You brought him in to get his opinion. Now he's got a year. Now listen to him.
And I think I don't want to have any grousing by the ownership or the Cubs front office when he does tell him what he needs. This is exactly why you paid him. You paid him because he is fantastic in the dugout, but you paid him to have a role in figuring out what your organization is going to be, how you can build a sustainable level of success like the Brewers have, where it's like it didn't even matter that Craig Counsell was the manager of the Brewers. Then Pat Murphy slid right on over and everything was fine. But that's because they had an organizational model that worked and kept working and will keep working even with Counsell not being there. So
yeah,
use
that's
that
the thing.
Experience.
Yeah, that's the thing, Lawrence. I'm sorry, but like Texter saying, does Milwaukee have a superstar? Not quite. Yelich was, but he has faded off. Willie Adames is a badass. Adames is a badass, and he's a free agent, and he's going to get heavy, heavy pay. Jackson Churio is a potential superstar, though he's not there yet. But no, they've done it with this tremendous balance. But they have all these young players who are cheap and manageable because that's their factory. They're Midwest Tampa. So, I mean, that's what they do. You are not that. You know, we talked a big game about their farm system. They talked a big game about their farm system. We never saw Owen Casey. You know, Matt Shaw was a rumor who never quite got up there. PCA got here and developed, and that's been fun.
He might end up being that guy. I want to leave room for that, and I'm not. I wasn't a believer in Pete Crow Armstrong, so I want to put that on the record. I have been so impressed with how he's developed, and I think that it's one of the more interesting stories of the Cubs 2024 season on how a guy that looked lost, looked like he was a 4A bat for a big portion of time. It's a good reminder, too, Spiegs. Like, it's a reminder of how baseball is such a humbling game that – you see this guy and you go, man, if he could just get on first. And then he started to produce. And then it wasn't just he's just going to be some fast, slappy guy. You saw him hitting the alleys. You saw him hitting the ball over the wall. And what it's like when that guy gets a ball in the gap, there's the danger of it being a triple every single time. Mm-hmm. So he's going to eventually be that, but why not cover your bets? You know, while you're trying to get PCA to that point, give him and the rest of these guys a little bit of help. I think there are redundancies in the corners for the Cubs. Even though I think Ian is a much better defender than Seiya, I think their games offensively are too similar. And I'd like to see Ian's not going to break. He's too rigid. And I say that with all love and respect. He's too rigid where he's not going to go chase Slug. He's going to let Slug find him. You do need more Slug on this team. And those are the positions where you have some room to maybe do that. But that's kind of getting back to what you're saying. Let's talk about no trade clauses. And let's talk about how you can go and try and build something.
Yeah. And you know, Say is the guy who's it's such a tricky thing because he's a good dude. He's their best offensive player on the year. He's their best offensive player. But he can't play the outfield anymore for you. He frustrates you on the bases. And it when you're paying, I think it's 19 mil and then 21 mil the next 2 years, I would absolutely talk to him and see if he's game to waive the no trade. I don't think you can pay that 19, 20 mil for a DH that you can't play out there. I think Bellinger's going to be here anyway. And, you know, you don't have a ton of options and things you can move. We'll see what they want to sign. But I think you're going to want that DH spot open for superstar hitter or for roll-off as you use guys who you want to buy them a day here and there, that kind of thing.
Why don't we hear from Jed on this, where we're talking about how do you get closer? How do you start to work towards building a 90-win team? Here's what the Cubs president of baseball operations had to say about it.
Yeah, I do. I've said this a million times. I do believe in projections. You can get, you can win 90 games by getting your 90th percentile outcome. I don't think that's a 90-win team. And I know that sounds like a strange thing to say, but, you know, to me, the goal is you've got to get to a place where 90 is the 50th percentile outcome or close to it. That's how you build, you know, a quality team. You know, the 16 Cubs, we did not project to win 103 games. That was a better than expected result. But we were expected to win well into the 90s, and I think that's this. You know, that I think that's when I think about what a 90-win team looks like. It's like, what is your projection, and can you get there reasonably, not with everything going right? And I think it's balance. I think that when you look at teams like that, you know, there's not holes. There's, you know, balance in the pitching staff, the bullpen. There's, you know, a good lineup. When you look around, there are weaknesses to teams that are winning 90 games, but. Not a lot. They're not a lot of holes. They're very well-built teams, and I think that's the focus is, you know, built, you know, just raising your replacement level at each position, raising, you know, your floor over and over and over until you get to the place where you don't have holes, and I think that's when you have that kind of balance and you can project to the high 80s, low 90s.
That sounds crapping? Great.
Who are you crapping,
sounds
though?
Great.
Lawrence,
but...
who are you crapping? He believed the projections said that the Cubs were going to be an 82-win team, an 83-win team. I think the high number was 84.5. The main projection that I saw had them 82-79. They go 1-1 the next 2 days. They're 82-79. If you believe in projections and you want 90 wins to be in the 50th percentile of your projections. You got to go into a season projected as an 87, 88 win team, let alone you dream of a 90 win team. They're going to finish exactly where their projections were. So you can't be the guy who comes out here now and says that you believe in projections when this is exactly what you have, is exactly what you delivered. Wow.
It sounds really good. To say that you want to build a team where you can fall back to being a 90-win team because it's so good, but that costs money. That means you have to be really shrewd. And there are victories that the Cubs should take as a front office for this offseason. The Shota signing is incredible. He's been amazing. And for the most part, Michael Bush was better than I expected. So those are victories for them.
I'll give you two more. Bullpen pickups along the way. Tyson Miller, Jorge Lopez. They felt like scrap heap dumpster diving, but both of those guys ended up really good. And the bullpen overhaul speaks well to the possibilities for Council Hoyer on that front, in my opinion.
But now let's talk about two things that it felt like they were kind of hoping and wishing. The catcher position. Until Miguel Amaya, who again works with Craig Counsell on changing his approach at the plate and then starts to see results. But they lucked into what they got in 2023 from the catcher position. And they kind of roll back out there with it going, I wonder if we can catch lightning in a bottle again. And then the other part is third base, where they seemingly had a plan on what to do. But it was less that was even less projection than anything else, because most people didn't think that Christopher Morel would be an answer at third base, learning the position at the major league level. And I do wonder how much that played a role in him not having as much success at the plate. There's a lot there.
Yeah, there is. I mean, Morrell, I loved the bat. I thought it was a worthwhile experiment to see what was there. Patrick Wisdom was another righty power bat where you're thinking, all right, maybe Council finds a way to do that. But, you know, that thing failed. And the admission and the going out and trading for Paredes is an admission of it. By the way, Morrell in 46 games with Tampa has an OPS of 537. It's even worse than what it was here. And he's played predominantly second base and DH and left field. Not one game at third base for Christopher Morrell in Tampa Bay. Just to
add him to the candidates that I would like to join Ozzie on the Winter League team.
Man, you and me lining up to watch Venezuelan Winter League ball. Let's go, Moncada. Moncada and Morrell playing for Ozzie. Let's go.
I say let's do it. You want to do some Bears?
It's time, baby. It's time.
How about it? Let's bring in our guy, Mark Grody, to talk some Bears as the Bears get ready for their game against the Rams Sunday over at Soldier Field. Hey, Groats!
What's going on, Lauren Spiegel? How are you guys doing today?
We are delightful, man, on a Friday afternoon. It's about time you got in here. This Lawrence guy likes baseball too much. I'm a little worried about it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was listening a little bit. I'm like, yeah, that's some hot baseball talk right there.
Yeah, now he likes and knows baseball. It's going to be a problem for a lot of people.
Yeah, and he's enthusiastic about it. You'll adjust, though. I have faith in you. One thing that you have always done with all your partners throughout the years, you have always adjusted, Spiegel.
So. You know what?
Love baseball, though.
Right. I know you do. It's what puts me above Shane Waldron, frankly. Like, I rank higher than Shane Waldron on the scale of adjusters. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens this weekend. Where are we in terms of finally getting to see the big three-headed monster at wide receiver? That's their dream. And obviously, I think it was a lot of Bears fans' dream as well to see all of the weaponry on display.
Yeah, I mean, the best way I could describe the fact that they haven't had Keenan Allen for the last 2 weeks, and it's not the end of the world, but it sucks because that was what they had. That was kind of the identity. We keep hitting everybody over the head with identity. The identity of this team was supposed to be those three wide receivers and Caleb Williams and a running game to complement it and a really good defense. Some of that has worked out, but obviously not all of it. So here's the deal out here today. We did find out that Keenan Allen is officially questionable for the game. He did practice again today, and today was the first time in a while that we got to ask Keenan Allen questions about the injury, when it started, how it's going to hinder him going forward this year. Is it going to affect his playing relationship with Caleb Williams? Here's a good 3 minutes with the Bears wide receiver Keenan Allen answering all of the questions that I think you probably have about Keenan Allen and his status going forward.
It's been tough. Basically the same thing you dealt with at the end of last season?
Yeah, kind of. It just kind of went into the plantar fasciitis this year.
Is that something you think you'll have to deal with and manage for the rest of the year?
Nah, that's why we, been playing it safe. Just going day by day with it, week by week, seeing how I feel. And, last week, decided to sit it out and, still playing it day by day.
Were you in pain during the Tennessee game then, first game? Okay. And then that was like, I'm going to give it a try.
It's been hurting since training camp. I was just able to, run through it. And, it was just a heel at that point. Just like a bruise, kind of like a spur on the heel. And, obviously tried to stop in the end zone. And then it went to the plantar fasciitis.
Is there treatment that you do for it, or is that simply a rest?
Not a lot. It's kind of hands-on stuff. Do a little joint mobs and stuff like that.
So what is the timeline on it? Because you seemed like you were running pretty well in August until late in August, they called it a cleat issue at the time. Can you just help us understand exactly when it started up?
Probably right before the joint practice with the Bengals. Okay. Started irritating me, kind of just wear and tear type of deal. Like I said, a bone bruise, a bone spur on the heel. And like I said, it just got worse throughout the Titans game. And then, had that abrupt stop. where it kind of stretched him.
When you know it's happened, what's going through your mind when you know what's coming with the injury?
It's just irritating. It's kind of like a hamstring pull. Can't really do nothing about it. Kind of wait until it heals up.
Do you have to get a shot to play through it or anything? Or just tolerate the pain, I guess?
No, we ain't doing that.
How confident are you that it's past you now? It's not going to get re-aggravated moving forward?
I'm pretty confident in it. The training staff has done a phenomenal job getting it right, having it feeling better.
This thing might sound simple, but is this something that, like, just normal things a receiver does, cutting and running and moving? How does that affect that?
The obvious link is your foot, and you got to run on your foot. That's hard.
You're gonna go ahead.
Just to clarify, you feel better? Do you feel better physically now that going into this game than you did going into week one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you going to give it a go tomorrow? Green light? You going to play?
Yeah, tomorrow's walkthrough, so I'll be out there.
I mean Sunday.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Today felt good. See what we come up with.
Can you watch him from the sideline in Houston and then the film from Indy? What's been your diagnosis? What's been wrong with the offense in your absence?
Just all guys, everybody. We just got to find a way to execute better, execute the plays that's being called, and just kind of accept the challenge of making everything right on the offense and just put it on our shoulders.
How's it been for you? When you
will be in a pretty good spot with Caleb, even though you've missed some practice time and he's a rookie.
Yeah, I think we'll be fine. Football's football. I've been playing for a little while now. So hopefully I can get to my spots.
How have you dealt with the injury in terms of wanting to get in here and get off to a really good start and then having this kind of pop up on you in August going into the season, missing some games now?
Yeah, I'd rather happen now rather than the end of the season. That was the main thing of resting an extra week and just making sure we put this beside us and be able to be healthy for the rest of the season.
This segment with Mark Grody is brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS. That is a veteran adult in Keenan Allen and a real good job by the Bears beat, I thought, Lawrence. Like, kind of going through all the details. You heard Jason Leisure saying they called it a cleat issue because that was funky. And just Keenan, talking about it, there is reason for optimism from his perspective because he thinks they've managed it to the point that it's not going to persist. He doesn't know that, of course, but he's hoping that it's not something that's going to linger all year long.
Yeah, but it's plantar fasciitis, so it is.
That's exactly what
you think it's going to linger?
Like, yeah, and I mean, like, they're... basketball players obviously deal with this, and they're doing jumping up and down. There is no worse footwear for a man than a football cleat. And if you're dealing with plantar fasciitis, it can be problematic. And so, like, I'm sitting here as I'm listening to him, I'm going, okay, well, the good thing is that you did draft this position, and maybe that ends up being something that turns out to be a silver lining, that you at least have someone that you are projecting to be a major part of your offense to take the place of that. The problem is there really isn't anyone to take the place of Rome moving up a slot. The depth of the wide receiving room for the Bears are the top three guys. And then after that, there's a major drop-off.
And it's a specific position. Isn't it gross when we're talking about this? And salute to major drop-off. I'm with you. He was not a good representative of the armed forces, sadly. It all went downhill with major drop-off.
He had a lot of bad plans, Speaks. And that's and he never really seemed to follow through on them. Like, it's weird to think that he ended up making it all the way to the rank of major,
yeah,
to tell you the truth.
he didn't. Well, that's where the drop off happened.
I think it happened right there.
By the way, I do want to do a segment based on something you said, Lawrence. No worse footwear for a man than a football cleat. I don't know. Like, when I've gone out in Crocs and socks in the past, I mean, that is not a good look.
Is that the show you're doing in football season on Sundays? Crocs and socks?
Yeah, no, it's me and it's Dr. J, John Najarian. We do a show called Crocs and Socks.
And Josh Schrock.
Crocs and socks and Schrocks.
Yeah, Schrock and Crocs and socks.
What about those old wooden clogs that people used to wear? Like literally a piece of wood on the bottom of their foot.
I think that Grody, that's the point. If the category is worse footwear for a man than a football cleat.
Clogs.
I think, how about, I mean, pumps? I don't know. I mean, I don't want to. Well, there's no judgment.
No, definitely no judgment. I mean,
well, I think you're judging. I think you're judging. I do.
And I would, the women will tell you, at least the women that I know will tell you, that there's no worse shoe for a woman than a heel.
Yes, it's the worst. It's ridiculous. When I see my wife put those on, I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I won't be wearing them long. I'm like, well, it's ridiculous. Why
wear
them at all?
What are you doing, Spiegel? Give her a little, you know, say she looks beautiful or something like that. She's doing that for everybody.
Mark,
that's
good
advice. Wearing the high heels, man. Come on.
That's good advice. Thank you. But back to the point, Keenan Allen plays a very specific wide receiver position that they don't seem to have someone to play. I thought maybe Tyler Scott would be an option route guy on the inside, but they haven't even really bothered to try that, have they, Groats?
Yeah, that's a mystery. The Tyler Scott thing is a mystery to me that I've not been able to figure out yet. I will eventually, but they seem to let Tyler Scott play a lot in the preseason. That he's a guy that they maybe this does have to do with the fact that he dropped a bunch of balls last year and he just did not have a great second half of his rookie year. He's a guy that they don't trust. Velus Jones, obviously a guy that they stopped trusting. Colin Johnson, they're like, we kind of like him. We'll activate him every once in a while. But yeah, this is what they were depending on, this trio of wide receivers. So to now have him kind of back, it's good. I'm like Lawrence. I'm a little skeptical that with this injury and just kind of seeing Keenan Allen and just the body language and all that and the way he was answering the questions, I am skeptical that he's all of a sudden just going to be okay and good to go. And we all have to keep in mind, too, with Keenan Allen, you look at this as this is probably a one-year deal. This is it. So the
Correct.
Bears are urgent to get him on the field. Like for instance, Matt Eberflus told us straight up that they are anticipating that Keenan will play. He was very positive. Well, Allen, when I asked him the question, of course, I said tomorrow, which I meant Sunday. He's like, kind of like, we'll see. He's got to think about his future as well. So he's not going to go out there and play through, you know, 50% or really awful pain at this point because he's got to keep his own future in mind as well, unless the Bears want to do business with him.
And remember, part of the reason that he's a Bear is because of his handling of the business of Keenan Allen.
Yes.
Where he wanted to make sure that he was going to be in a position to get paid. And so can you do that if you're hobbled? I don't know. Is it better for him to not play four or five games this season so that at the end of the season he can put up the numbers that he needs to get to the next contract? I don't know. But that's going to be up to him. He, as much as I am worried about him, I'm more worried about Andrew Billings because of how important he is to the Bears' defense. What's the latest on him?
Yeah, officially, Andrew Billings is questionable, which is an upgrade. He did practice. He's dealing with a knee injury. I know our friend Josh Schrock was able to talk to him, and it sounded like he was going to give it a go. Like he's sounding pretty optimistic. We'll have to wait till game time. But this definitely, when he popped up on that injury report yesterday, I thought that was jarring. But the fact that it's looking better right now, and Eberflus kind of indicated that he could be good to go. So I'm feeling better about Andrew Billings today. But yeah, that was Lawrence. That was the number one guy for me on even all that's been going on with Keenan Allen. When I saw Billings on that injury report yesterday, I was like, that's a problem, but it feels a little bit better today.
You know, no knock on Josh Schrock, but he showed up in Crocs and socks for the last episode of Stocks and Jocks.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
No, I refuse. I refuse.
By the way, no, and I'll add this. Did you just see the text that we got?
Oh, what's that?
We got a text from Dan Weeder that said, Schrock with Fox. And Fox and Socks. Socks and Crocs on
That's
Fox
enough.
With Jocks.
That's right.
That's
when John
enough.
Fox when John Fox was on Stocks and Jocks with Josh Schrock, they both were wearing Crocs and Socks.
By the way, Josh Schrock's final covering of a Bears game will be this Sunday. If we're gonna make this report about Josh Schrock and things that rhyme with Josh Schrock, Schrock and Awe covering his final Bears game
That's
on Sunday.
Bad. McNeil. Dan McNeil is upset.
I know. Danny Mac, he's a what we know about Danny Mac, sensitive man. Sensitive man.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's been trying. I've done like multiple podcasts on the subject too. It's going to be weird when people will click on over to Channel 200 and it's not there anymore Sunday.
Mm. Yeah, it's actually happening. I feel like there's been like 10 endings to that, to the television, like with all the you know,
the retrospective
shows.
Yeah.
Yes. But it's really going to happen. You're right, Lawrence. One of these days, it's really just not going to be there.
No, it's going to be Monday.
One of these Mondays. Oh, the next one, I think, is it. All right. So look, you made quite a ripple on yesterday's radio program, Groats, when you brought us Mercedes Lewis seemingly calling out Shane Waldron for not calling out players as they watch tape. Like, shit, Mercedes Lewis basically sounded like he was saying, we'd like a coach who would tell us when we do something wrong, please. Wani didn't quite hear it that way. But also Mercedes talked about, you know, other stuff too, like players making sure that they have to do the right thing. And I mean, it was wonderful, wonderful stuff. Did you get a chance to follow up on that, or did anybody else follow up on that with DeFluss today?
I did. I asked him about that. Then you'll hear a follow-up question. I believe it was Colleen Kane. So here's everything from Matt Eberflus about yesterday's festivities and the waves, as you said, that I apparently caused. Here is the Bears head coach, Matt Eberflus.
Oh, I think that's a great moment. I really do. I think that's all positive. You're learning your guys as you go through adversity or go through the season, and I think that's always the case. And you know, you do that with rookies when your first year with them. You learn, you know, how they respond to different things in terms of success, adversity, maybe injury, a lot of things that happen in football. And that's what you're learning, that, and you're learning that as a coordinator, you know, as you go through it. And that's the relationship that the foundation that we built in the springtime and continue to build, is just ongoing process of that. And I think all those conversations are great.
How do you feel like Shane has taken the feedback from the players this week?
Good. Shane's a great communicator. Works well with his staff. Works well with the players. And all feedback's always good feedback. You know, it really is. And I think that, you know, the first thing, you know, one of the first things we talk about is respect. You know, respect in the building for staff members, for everybody that's in the building, and that's done in a respectful way. But it's also got to be honest, and it's also got to be forthright. It's also got to be detailed, and getting to a common solution that's workable for everybody. So, and that's what we're doing here.
Is it refreshing too that the players want to be held accountable? Is that unique?
No, I don't think so, because we've done that since we've been here. I think that's an important thing, to hold everybody accountable. You look at your performance for what it is, and, you know, it's an after-action review. It's done in the military. We do that too. It's really the same type of thing. You know, what was good, you know, look at what you need to improve on, you know, and making sure that you take the steps necessary to improve on those things week to week.
So an after action review, like the military, and what he's talking about is a structured discussion that examines the results of an event or a project to improve future outcomes. Okay, so I hope that's happening, because the positivity, it sounds nice, but it's like when he said they're encouraged, you know what I mean? Or when he says we really like to, you know, we like the play, we still like the play. It's hard for fans and for us to hear when we think they should be more critical, and then when a player of Mercedes Lewis's stature and experience basically begs for them to be more critical.
Let me just add this about that, because I was thinking about it a lot today, and I wrote down in my notes, like, this is disconcerting that it's happening this early, but if I can be Petey positive here for a second, I'd rather everyone be open to this and it happen early on,
exactly,
than, and him be open and Shane be open to listening to the guys in his room, than other play callers that we have seen with the Bears that are so dogmatic and don't want to listen to their players. We'll see if this changes, if players a couple of weeks from now are still talking to Groats about this up there, then that's not good. But I am choosing, and each Bear fan can kind of decide how they feel about it. I am choosing to look at this and go, at least they felt comfortable saying it, and maybe everyone will end up growing because of it. But yes, it is ridiculous and alarming that it's happening in week three.
But it does need to happen, and you're right about it. The good part, the good potential of it happening early. You know, so the question is, Groats, do you think everybody can take this and grow from it? And what does that look like from our perspective?
Well, that's the part we don't know. Like, is Shane Waldron, will he, this, oh, okay, so I can call you guys out. Okay, I had no idea. Now everything's going to be good. All right, the following, Mercedes Lewis, we're going to start with you, with your offside. And we're going to move on. Here's something I don't like. Like, does he actually have the personality to play along with what the players are requesting? So I agree. I said the same thing on Mully and Hall this morning. It's actually pretty rare that, we'll just keep it Bears, that they saw a problem and they have a solution for the problem. Now, will they actually be able to activate it and make things better? I do think it's a win that they were able to find out three games into the season that they need more from their offensive coordinator. And ironically enough, in terms of communication, like if I hear one more time about how great the communication is, and Shane Waldron's a great communicator and all that, he might be a good communicator, but obviously something wasn't getting communicated correctly to these players. Mm-hmm. So I just find it sort of ironic and off base to keep hitting us over the head with the communication is good when obviously it needed to be better. And I guess there is some good communication from the players to say, here's what we need. Now let's see if Shane Waldron and the rest of the offensive staff can pull it off, and Matt Eberflus for that matter.
You're in the midst of a segment with Mark Grody, sponsored by Illinois Department of Transportation. It's not a game, Illinois.com. Olin Kreutz coming up at 5:15 here on Spiegel and Holmes. In that regard, if you had to take a guess right now on what the offensive line is left to right on Sunday at first Bears snap, what is it, Mark?
I will tell you exactly what it will be, Spiegel. This is it. This is not a guess. I can tell you that it will be Braxton Jones as your left tackle. Tevin Jenkins as your left guard. Hope we're building a little anticipation here. Coleman Shelton will be your center. Your right guard will be Matt Pryor. Matt Pryor will be your starting right guard, so you could put it down. Nate Davis benched. Right tackle, Darnell Wright. That's the way it'll line. Unless something crazy happens between now and Sunday, that's the way it's gonna line up.
So Darnell Wright healthy enough is one headline, but what did you get in terms of the definitive benching of Nate Davis?
Well, nobody ever said, Matt Eberflus didn't say he has been benched. He just said that Matt Pryor that they're going with the same lineup that they went with last week in Indianapolis. So I guess I can fill in the blank and say that Nate Davis has been benched. I mean, this is 2 weeks in a row. I mean, that was what they went with last week. We know Davis had to come in for a little bit in the game, but it's happened. It's happened. I mean, here
we are.
And
he's off the injury report.
He's off the injury report. We're heading into week four, and and it was all justified. You know, from that, Lawrence, you remember that day of training camp where I was losing my mind talking about Nate Davis, and now we understand where the place that they came from. That is the team too, and unfortunately for Nate Davis, he's been benched, and Matt Pryor is going to be the guy, and that's the solution for now. We'll see if Matt Pryor can hold it down. I mean, he did not come in here to be a starter, so, or maybe he did, but we'll see if he can hold it down while Ryan Bates is out, and then when he is healthy and returns from IR, then we'll see what really happens with his offensive line.
Yeah, with him going with full participation and not having an injury designation on the Friday injury report, they can't even lean on, well, he's got a groin injury. Well, then that should have been on the report.
Right.
If it turns out that Pryor's the starter at guard, they've effectively benched him, which probably leads to a much bigger conversation, Speaks,
yes,
about the offensive line and Ryan Poles that we definitely need to have.
This is a big miss on Nate Davis because of the money that you spent, of course, and the ripple effect that that has on the cap, but also because I think a lot of people think they thought Davis was going to be a better guard than Tevin Jenkins, so let's go ahead and move Tevin away from Darnell Wright. And because they thought Nate Davis was going to move people in the run game, you know, and he has not been healthy or competent enough to really do that. So if they had believed in Tevin a little more and left him there, there's a lot of people who think that they would have been in a better spot as a running offensive line right now, right here.
It also feels like, and this was part of Grody's, him being exasperated by this back in camp. I don't know Nate Davis at all, and I don't want to judge him, but if I am judging off of his actions as a Bear and putting that together with what people in Tennessee told me about his habits down in Nashville, it feels like a guy who isn't as invested in playing as other people would like for him to be. Now, that might not be true, and I want to make sure, because that's a hard thing for me to say. I am pro player, and this game in particular is really bleeping hard. But when I hear that guy talk about the game, and when I see some of the ways that it goes beyond vet day of him taking off, it feels like I'm watching a guy who doesn't want to play.
Hey, man, I'll say it. And if I end up wrong on it or whatever, but it, right now it reads like he is a dog. It reads like he is a dog with fleas who got paid and does not feel the same passion having been paid. I agree. A terrible thing to say about a player, but that's sure as hell the way it reads.
I can go dog, but dog with fleas, Spiegel? I think that you have crossed the line, man. I mean, come on. No, all of what you guys are saying, I have, let's just put it this way, I have no great rebuttal to anything that you're saying for the sake of Nate Davis. That's all I'll say. That's all I can say.
Do you have any nuggets or tidbits?
Yes. Let me just be clear on the injury report, because we've kind of been picking around a little bit, so I'll just give it really quickly. We mentioned Darnell Wright, good to go. Remember, we were talking about Roma Dunze, Speaks. You were all alarmed about the hip injury, as justifiably you should be. But Roma Dunze is good to go. I did notice he was wearing in the locker room today a long, like, ace bandage covering his right leg, and maybe something he had on last week as well, but I just noticed it in the locker room today. Keenan Allen, Andrew Billings, Kevin Byard, all questionable. Terrell Smith, Zach Pickens, Steven Carlson, they are all out. And finally, offensive linemen today were wearing t-shirts in the locker room today with a huge face of Darnell Wright on it. I came to find out that it was Hard Knock superstar Theo Benedett who had them made. I asked Benedett, like, what's going on? Why are we all wearing, you know, the Darnell Wright face? And he said, my question to you is, why wouldn't you wear a Darnell Wright t-shirt? So that's as far as I've gotten in terms of this caper that is going on in the Bears locker room.
You'll
it's
see the
pretty
shirt.
Hilarious.
The shirt's coming out soon.
I don't know if that guy can play football, but they should probably just hand him a microphone already and be done with it.
Director of morale.
Theo Benedett?
Make Theo Benedett Bears Caleb Presley. Go ahead.
I haven't talked to him much, and we all saw him on Hard Knocks, but when I had that little exchange with him today, I thought it was pretty funny, because let me ask you a question. When is it ever a bad time to be wearing a Darnell Wright t-shirt? And I just looked at him and said, I have no follow-ups to that. Asked and answered. Good stuff.
He is correct on that. And Groats, we appreciate the extended Bears report on a Friday. Thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to do it, guys. Have a great weekend. And finally, Bears. Bye.
That is Mark Grody. He does a wonderful job of covering the Bears for the Score. That has been over an hour of uninterrupted stuff.
Let's do some more
on the Spiegel and Holmes show.
I'm not afraid. Let's go. Let's go.
Good. Spiegs, I got to run something by you. It's just a theory at this point, but I want to work it. Or a thesis, I want to work it and see if it makes any sense. And it was sparked by what we had in a conversation yesterday with Dave Wannstedt. Then it was further sparked by some other stuff I was listening to today. So I want to pick your brain on it and see if it makes any sense to you. We'll do that next here on The Score.
From the field to the locker room to the airwaves, The Score delivers big-name Bears players all season long. Monday mornings after the game, get reaction from Bears' number one wide receiver, DJ Moore at 8 with Mullin Hall.
I really don't say too much about the game plan anyway. I just go out there and do what's asked of me, and that's that.
Then at 5, it's star cornerback Jalen Johnson with Spiegel and Holmes.
Yeah, a lot of coaches don't have egos, a lot of players don't have egos, but if you're not winning, you got to really throw that ego out the door.
And Tuesdays at noon, it's Chicago native and starting line.
linebacker T.J. Edwards with Bernstein and Harris.
And it's got to happen now. I mean, we have the guys, we have the players, we have the coaches.
Three big names taking you inside the Bears locker room
on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Always live on the free Odyssey app.
You can feel that crispness in the air where you want to open up the windows and you're going to get on the couch. You're going to be watching college football. You're going to be watching the NFL. If you want to have a great snack by your side, you should go get a Corner Booth pizza. I have a bunch of them in the freezer for nights just like tonight. Barbecue chicken pizza is my favorite. If you want to try the sausage and giardiniera, be my guest. Whatever you try, it's going to be good. Visit your local grocer. Pick up the thin, crispy pizza loaded with premium toppings. If they don't have it, tell them, what are you waiting on? Get Corner Booth pizza in your store. It's delicious and satisfying and fun. You're going to love it. Corner Booth Pizza.
Football season means it's time to start thinking about the roof on your business. Is it time to winterize? Make the right call. A game plan that includes the highly trained craftsmen and craftswomen of Roofers and Waterproofers, Local 11, to get the job done right. To find professionally trained roofing and waterproofing contractors who are dedicated to providing quality, value, and service, go to ChicagoRoofingContractors.org for all your roofing needs.
This is the story of the one. As a warehouse manager, her job is to transform chaos into clarity and to see patterns where others see problems. Luckily, she's got a partner who shares her perspective. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products, backed by